Greetings and salutations. It is the Clary Podcast. How are you guys doing? It is probably the first real gorgeous day we've had here in Minnesota. We actually able to go run around the lakes, Lake of the Isles, Lake Cal. Oh, we got to do the racist running game. Oh my gosh, yes. Yes, the return of the racist running game, ladies and gentlemen. Because it's winter. We go 6 months without running outdoors. Although there are some crazy people, these insane people. Maybe I should make this a curse-free podcast. I was going to say crazy, insane mother effers. Maybe, you know what? We'll be kind. We'll be nice. I'll attempt to make this a curse-free podcast. There are some crazy mofos out there in Minnesota who will run in any weather. And I was one of them back when I was young. I didn't care that if it was like, I remember, I think the lowest I ever ran in was minus 15 degrees Fahrenheit. For our foreign listeners, you guys do the calculations for whatever it is Celsius. And I remember I would bundle up almost to like wearing a snowmobile suit, but I'd have undershirt, long sleeve shirt, sweatshirt, and then a jacket. I had snowboarding goggles on, hat, and a mask, like a not a scarf, but an actual mask. I'd put it tied around basically an old shirt, a babushka. Turn around, put a bandana on, you know, look like I was going to rob something or be in the Wild West. And then I go run. I used to live downtown Minneapolis in Loring Park, which was the gay district. So for those locals who get the joke, get your jokes out about me being gay already. For those of you who don't know Minneapolis, this is irrelevant to you. And then I'd go and I'd run from my apartment over on LaSalle, 1501 South LaSalle. And I go run around Lake of the Isles, Lake Calhoun, below zero weather. And by the time I got back, like two completely different atmospheres or weather patterns or environments had formed, where outside it was absolutely deathly freezing cold. But because I had ran and bundled myself up so much, when I would take off all the clothing, I mean, it'd just be drenched in sweat. It's like you were actually, by the time I made it around the first lake, I was already trying to, you know, taking off the hat, you know, trying to cool myself down, taking off the babushka. And, and then you think like, wow, you know, a lot of people, they breathe in this super cold air and you get frostbite on your vocal cords or your throat or something like that. And it's like one of the dumbest things you can possibly do, I guess, taking the precautions of putting it around, or perhaps I had acclimated to this particular environment. Oh yeah, that's what I would do. So the insane people, they go running year round, but not me. Nope. Not anymore. Old Aaron got old. I remember, like when we were kids, and when I say when we are kids, I mean any of you north of the Mason-Dixon line, we have these things called snow days. And I know you people south have snow days. And it's like, oh, there's a dusting. Oh, shut down the whole state. Oh, what's this white stuff? You think it's like a nuclear radioactive element. And then the entire state of Georgia shuts down. But for those of us who actually had real snow days, we're like, even our snowplows couldn't keep up with it. You guys remember this? Oh, I loved winter. I loved it. It was freedom. The snow was anti-teacher. The snow was our friend. The snow was our ally in our 13-year war against the evil tyrants known as the public school teachers and the private school teachers, just teachers in general evil. You know, it's like, she's a public school teacher. All right, so she's a Bolshevik. She's a private sector teacher. All right, so she's just your regular old Soviet communist. Whatever, we all hated you. You're all tyrants. And the snow was our friend. The snow came in, and we had snow days. Oh, I've mentioned it before, but guys, I pity you millennials and any of you young kids out there who shouldn't be listening to this, by the way, because this is an adult show. There was no better feeling than waking up at 6 a.m., listening to that radio, waiting for them to count down when your school district or your school canceled classes, because you tune in to the radio. You knew there was a storm coming. The guy, the weatherman, would come in at 6 p.m. Make snowstorm coming in. Chance that schools might be closed. And then you had hope. Then you had fucking hope. And there you are. You're like this little 8-year-old kid who has to go to prison every day because the baby boomers didn't think right and they thought, education's the most important thing. And they didn't know they were sending you to a mental prison. And you're like praying and praying and praying. And you went to bed. And I remember, I hated school so much. I mean, you remember frost? Like you get a frost. Basically, frost is when the dew freezes. It's not snow. There was no precipitation. It's just the temperature dropped over the course of the evening or the course of the night that the dew that would normally form, which had already formed on the grass and the leaves down below, would freeze because over the night the temperatures had dropped. So dew formed, then the temperature dropped below 32, and you saw frost. And I remember so much hating school and being so desperate not to go back to that veritable prison. I thought, are they going to cancel school? My mom's like, no, it's just frost, you stupid little five-year-old kid. What the hell's wrong with you? But if there was like a real storm, like the weatherman said, hey, look, something's brewing out there on the west, and it's going to come in from Minnesota because I was in Milwaukee at the time. And we're estimating, you know, 6 to 8 inches. And you're like, oh. And then you wake up, and you woke up early because you were excited. And I'd say 80% of the time, 85% of the time, if it was like a real, like there was a real go. Like if the weatherman said, yeah, we might have to close school tomorrow, there was a good 80, 85% chance that they closed. And then you'd heard, you know, they go through the schools, you know, Waukesha School District is closed. Racine County is closed. Milwaukee County Schools closed. St. John's Auschwitz Nazi concentration camp that hates young little boys and girls closed. We're like, hey! Hey! And it would be dark out. You'd go grab your sled. You'd get yourself in that snowmobile suit. And you'd be dashing for the freaking hills. And you think that you'd be the only... No. Every kid was out there rushing for that freaking hill, man. That one hill in that neighborhood, you know the one we're talking about. That one hill, the sledding hill, where every kid went down it enough times that the pressure of the sleds would temporarily melt. Because with pressure, the melting temperature goes down. Yes, down. No, up. It goes up. So you'd melt it, then it would refreeze them. And then you just got this ice slick that was like the suicide ramp that even Evel Knievel wouldn't go down. And then you'd, always great. And these kids would be out 7:30 a.m. in the morning. Sun's barely getting up. And there we are sledding, having snowball fights. Oh, it was heaven. It's exactly like the episode in The Simpsons where it was snow day. And Mayor Diamond Joe Quimby comes, I declare snow day the greatest day ever in Springfield history. Yay! Oh. How the hell did I get on sledding? Where did I go? I started with something originally. Oh, so the running, yeah, so I'd go run around, yeah, back when I was young, and I'd, you know, I was even a good snowboarder. It may shock many of you young ladies who like to fantasize about me late at night, that I actually was a good snowboarder, so you may add that to my super awesome list of accomplishments and studliness. But yeah, I was actually pretty good at snowboarding, could hit a couple jumps, could goofy foot, you know, doing 180s, or 360s rather, and I mean, I wasn't no freaking Sean Hawk. What's the guy's name? Hang on, let's look this up. Wait, that's the skateboarder. Sean White. Is Sean White the snowboarder? Sean White. Redhead kid? Sean. Oh, yeah, look. He cut his hair. Yeah, there it is. What, did he dye it? Okay, not like this guy didn't have any trouble getting girls to begin with. Okay, so he had his long red hair. He looked like Carrot Top. But now look at this guy. He's like growing in and turning into a man. He's got this nice... they removed the image. What the hell? Yeah, he cut his hair, but then he dyed it. But he looks good cut. Like, you girls, holy crap. At least we got a good-looking American on our side. This guy puts Harry and George, or whatever the frick his name, Harry and William. Yeah, look at this guy. Look at Sean White. Yeah, that's our frickin' royalty. We're snowboarders. Screw you. Holy shit, I'd nail him. This guy's a good-looking dude as he's gotten older. Sean White, hang on. Let's look at this Wikipedia. Holy crap. Girls, I'm not joking. Look at Sean White. Now, okay, Sean White in 2008, he's got the long red hair. He kind of looks like Carrot Top. He's like this goofy kid. And then you look at him, you're like, ah, yeah, the goofy kid. But this is all old pics. Look at the new pics. Look, I'm not bro-crushing on the guy. I'm just saying, like, holy shit. Jeez, look at this guy. Got a haircut? this picture, he's got a suit. Holy shit. Guys, look at this. Like, there's another guy you can hate. You can hate his guts. Ah, for Christ's sake, all these guys that are better looking than me. I'm pretty good, though. Right, ladies? Some of you girls love me, right? Send me fan mail, please. When was he born? September 2003, 1986. Okay, so he's about a decade. Net worth, $40 million. Oh, Christ. don't you feel a little bit jealous? Like, ah, this guy who's 10 years younger than me, he's all, like, super rich and everything. And you completely ignore the fact that maybe he, like, you know, excelled in a field that you were too lazy to do anything about, so you really have no right to complain. Ah, God, I hate these guys. They're all good-looking and all, like, superior to me and everything. All right, enough about Sean. Anyway, so I did the running. I went running today. Today was the first day. That's where I was going. Basically, I've become a coward. I've become a weakling. I used to run no matter what, hell or high water. Didn't care about the temperatures because I was young. And then you get older. And then it's just like, this snow and lack of sun sucks. So much so to the point that it makes me depressed nowadays. And I went running out today. I'm like, oh, this is a great day, beautiful day. First day to really, you could get some good running in. Hopefully it isn't a false start to spring. Like, hopefully this will continue on. And, yeah, I went around Lake of the Owls, Lake Calhoun, head down south, did my regular route. And, man, there was not, I'd love to say it was the racist running game, but nobody was out there running. Nobody. Absolutely no one was out there running. I mean, there was a handful, but the old captain, he placed third, only because there were three runners, of which I was the third, and I was the worst of all of them. There were two guys, just two guys. There was a black guy, and he was going a pretty good pace. I could tell he's going faster. But today, who won it in the racist running game is the white guy. The white guy totally dominated. He had a shirt that said "Run something or other" on it, and you could just tell he was charging. And I may have explained this before, but for those of you who are not familiar with Minnesota, or, you know, we have obviously a ton of lakes, and pretty much every lake in the metro has some kind of running path around it. So you go clockwise or counterclockwise. I always go clockwise. I don't know why. We really want to become a wild, crazy, you know, porn star, go counterclockwise. But obviously, you could tell when you're being passed when the person's running the same direction you are. So no one passed me, so I thought I was doing pretty good. But then you got to estimate it when the guy's coming the other way. Like, oh, how fast is this cocksucker going? Ah, oh, shit, he's young. They're all younger than me, too. All these college guys, they all go to St. Thomas or the U of M. Little college guys with their ripped, shredded abs, and they're running without their shirts on because they're college guys. They think they're 21 years old and they can run, and then they run, and they're all like 6 feet tall. These college guys. So you kind of look and say, okay, what pace are they going? And you usually know. Like, oh yeah, he's blown past me. You know, he's running the opposite direction, but he you know. When I run past him, my wind shear doesn't blow him over like a semi-truck. When they run so fast past you, and they blow you over like a semi-truck, and you're riding your motorcycle, like, yeah, maybe that guy's going a little bit faster than me. So, the other way you could tell is if you're running the same lake, and you know the distance of the lake, and they're running opposite directions, okay, we passed each other once, we're going to pass each other again on the other side. And then you could kind of ballpark it, like, you know, okay, how fast is this guy going? You know, I didn't do half the lake, so obviously he's going faster than me if we're passing. Oh, geez, I got maybe a third away around the lake, and this guy already passed. I'm like, you asshole. You 20-something, ripped, ab, six-pack asshole from St. Thomas. Probably from St. Thomas. Just they do that. They would be from St. Thomas because it's the private school, just to piss me off even more. This Mr. Freaking Perfect running around. Here I am, 40 years old, twice his age practically. I almost caught up with him. Come on. 6 miles ain't too bad for an old fart like me. Oh, it's just you young. They just rub it in your face because there's always somebody better than you. They could just sprint it out. That's the other thing is, if you want, Atham, stop what you're doing. Please stop what you're doing. Take a look at, look up Minneapolis. Do Google search Minneapolis. And in downtown Minneapolis, look to the southwest. For girls, that would be to the left and down. I know directions are not your forte. Got a couple eye rolls there. I know you girls who listen. You can do that. You know north and south and west. This is for the liberal women that tune in every once in a while to see if I am a genuine sexist and bigot. Yeah, ladies, I am there. That's my official statement. Go to hell. All right, so down and to the left. Back and to the right. Back into the right. Back into the right. Was it back into the left? Emma. So to the bottom left, southwest, there's three lakes. Technically four. There's Cedar Lake, there's Lake of the Owls, there's Lake Calhoun, there's Lake Harriet. And I do Lake of the Owls and Lake Calhoun. And if you're really good, like, you could kind of tell. See, there's these fake posers out there that do the running. See, they go only do one lap. and they only do one lake. So if you're only doing 3 miles, and each lake is roughly 3 miles. Lake of the Isles is like 2.8 miles. Lake Calhoun is 3.4. And I think Lake Harriet is like 3 or maybe 2.9. So roughly 3. So you get these hotshot flash in the pan types, you know, these guys with their abs who are young and good looking and tall and almost as awesome as me. They're like sprinting basically around it. So the only way you could really tell is if you run into them twice, because you're doing two lakes and they're doing the same two lakes, but they're going the opposite direction or the figure eight in the shit. And then you look, and then you really know that you suck, because when you see them on one lake, you can always have that excuse, this faggot's probably just doing one lake, I'm doing two, and then you see them on the other lake, and then you know they're still going almost twice the speed you are, like, ah, crap, yeah, I guess I do just suck. So that was the racist running game. There was no Asians, no nothing, no Hispanics. It was very, very lightly populated, just two white bros and a black bro. We just had our single black brother out there running. I finished last. That's basically what it boils down to. The white guy kicked both our asses. The black guy was doing pretty good. He certainly was kicking my ass. But the old captain still banged out 6 miles. Did all right. No stopping except when the occasional I had to text something or tweet something because I'm freaking addicted to this phone. It's not addiction. It's like life. These phones, man, I'll tell you, I know everyone's, oh, we're addicted to our phones. No, what we're doing is we're not wasting time anymore. That's what it boils down to. Oh, I know you people waste your time. Maybe you guys are on the Facebook or the Twitter or something like that. But when I do the Facebook or the Twitter, it's different, man. It's different. Actually, it is different. Actually, kind of doing work. So, and it's been a calming effect. Like, if I go to the grocery store and there's a line because the sheep will stay in lines, I'm like, ah, I'm in no rush. I can do all my work from the power of my hands. But that's the thing, it becomes addicting because it's like I directly control how much money I make from this phone. And so it's like survival. Worse than crack, worse than heroin. It's like, hey, money on the table. I won't starve if I answer this email. You know, like, catch up. Well, it becomes too bad. Then you gotta, like, set it down. Otherwise, you don't have any social life. Girlfriend gets pissed off, friends get pissed off. Like, what the hell are you doing now? Set that damn thing down. It's like, no, you don't understand. It's food. It's rent. Anyway, how you guys doing? So this is the Clary Podcast. I'm glad you guys came with. That's my to-do list. This isn't the podcast list. Let's go through the podcast. Well, let's bang out some sponsors real quick here. If you'd like to advertise on the Clary Podcast, you certainly may. We have an estimate 3,000 listeners weekly. Sometimes I do two podcasts. Usually I do one, but it depends on what mood I'm in and how much time I have. It's $100 a month. That gets you a plug on the old YouTube and the podcast and a spot on the blog. If you're interested, please don't send me stupid shit. I don't want to ever hear about Donald Trump zombie hunter or vampire hunter ever again. I don't want to have that ever again. If you don't know what that is, that was just free advertising for this kid who sent me like a comic book and you can look into it. He paid, fair is fair. It was a good exchange, but I'm going to have like almost some, look, I'd rather advertise a prostitution ring than shitty millennial writing book crap, okay? That's really what I prefer to do. So I will have some standards, so don't let it deter you. But if you know you got a douchebag product, don't send me your douchebag products. I'm not going to advertise it. Speaking of not douchebag products, we have Chad Elkins. Chad, you're not a douchebag, huh? Huh? Look at that. Chad's gone up in my estimation. Chad, officially not a douchebag. He could put that on his CPA firm. Chad, officially not a douchebag Elkins. That'd be his mafia name. And you could visit Chad by going to my site first, CaptainCapitalism.blogspot.com. Click on his banner. You'll see Chad Elkins, CPA Tax Service. Hopefully he'll get his shit together and get his own website up and running. And when he does, Chad, let me know when it's up. Come on. Look, it's what? It's May 3rd. Month and a half later after, two weeks later. It's 2 weeks. You got hustle. You're a Notre Dame graduate. Let's go. Come on. You got that website up. If not, go talk to my IT guy, Brian, what's his name? I was going to give him a free plug, but I forgot his name. It's Brian something. Brian Johnson? I think it's Brian Johnson Design. Let's throw that in there. If you guys want to have a website designer IT, go to brianjohnsondesigns.com. Search him. He's a good Minnesota boy. But if you need taxes done or you need some kind of financial advice in terms of accounting, law, tax, etc., contact our good friend Chad Elkins, or just search him. You'll be able to find him on the Facebook. Well, we got my Cafe Press site. You can go to CaptainCapitalism.blogspot.com, look at Cafe Press. I got some mugs. I got some bumper stickers. I should really try and pursue it more, but I think for all the effort I put into it, I'm making like 30 cents an hour. And there's just some more pressing things. If you'd like the podcast archive, you're saying, well, I noticed that we started at episode 101, where the original first 100 go. They have been archived, so I could save money and space on the storage online. So you can go contact me at CaptainCapitalism.blogspot.com. There's a little contact banner. Email me. Let me know. I will put all the archived podcasts on a thumb drive and mail it to you. It's $30 for my time and cost of the thumb drive. And I apologize, but it's not going to be episodes 1 through 100. It'll be episodes 25 to 100, because the first 25 episodes are shit, and we had a lot of recording issues. So don't know where to go. I'm not jipping you. I'm not cheating you. I just don't have them, and you don't want them. Then we have the League of Extraordinary Podcasters. If you would be so kind, visit these guys. If you like this podcast, you might like these podcasts as well. 405media.com. That's a potpourri. A veritable radio show schedule of different podcasts, managed by our good friend John. Then we have Silvio Canto at Canto Talk, C-A-N-T-O, Canto Talk. You can find that on blogtalkradio.com. Pretty much, if you don't like mainstream media news, just go to Silvio's place. He'll catch you up to date. And besides which, you don't control any of it anyway. So he'll keep you abreast of the situation. Freedomainradio.com, that's Stefan Molyneux's outfit. We have the Beckloff, my good friend Chris Beckloff. You can find him on YouTube. Just look up the Beckloff, B-E-C-H-T-L-O-F-F, the Beckloff. Black Brigade Debrief by DT and the Man. You can go to blackbrigade.org. There's also my good friend Kerry Lutz at Financial Survival Network. And we all know Tom, St. Likas. Tom Likas, you can visit Tom at blowmeuptom.com. That is mandatory listening for all you young boys out there. Crush the Street, our good friend Ken, he's out there. Go to Crush the Street. That's a YouTube channel as well. And Engineered Truth, our friend Matthew is over at Engineered Truth, and that is also on YouTube. Kind of funny, I had a client, he's like, his parents are all, I've actually had two clients on the past week, where they're making money on YouTube. Like, one guy's already got 1 million subscribers because of the unique, I don't want to give it away, but the unique field he's in. And so there's a lot of people that are subscribing. So the guy, he's in a business, and his business makes a certain amount of money. But the fact he started doing YouTubes on this makes like thrice or eight times the amount of money that his actual business does. And so he's asking me, should my wife quit her shitty, you know, secretary job, and I should maybe have her do this? Like, yeah, I think so, dude. Haven't consulted him yet. I had some questions for him. So when he gets back to me, I'll be able to more accurately answer it. So, but yeah, and then there was another kid, all of a sudden he's making money. Look, guys, if you can make money on YouTube, go do it. And I pursue it to the full hilt. May not last forever, but when are you going to have another opportunity like that? Seriously. Look, YouTube and Google is going to figure it out. They're going to lower their prices. They're going to say, we're the only game in town, so screw you. You're going to accept what we offer you or not. And then we're going to be like, okay, well, maybe we'll go to Daily Motion and say, it's just like the Democrats and Republicans. Go ahead and waste your vote. Go to Daily Motion, see if you get the same traffic. And then people say, yeah, we might. We just might. So I don't really bank on making a ton of money on my YouTube videos in terms of advertising. Asshole Consulting, yes, but the advertising, no. So. And then Glorious Carl. Go to GloriousHat.com, where Glorious Carl sells his Glorious hat. It's a nice warm babushka hat. Or no, Ushanka hat. Nice warm hat. Made with real fake dead animal. So if you want to impress the girl, she's like, oh my God, is this real fake dead animal? And you're like, yes. Which I presume was what leftist girls like the girls who didn't want to do STEM, or the boys who didn't want to do STEM. This isn't a pick on them, but they're like, they're vegans, and they're all for the animals. And they're in high school, and it's like, I'm not good at sports, and I'm too lazy to do anything. So I'm like with, what's the animal rights activist thing? ALF? Animal Liberation Front. PETA, that's it, PETA. People for the Ethical Treatment. Oh, they joined that. They joined that like a recently divorced mom joins a religion. I just found Jesus.
you know, I totally fucked up my life. I think I want to find a reason to say that it's fatism and I had nothing to do with it. And I don't want responsibility for my actions. So I found this convenient religion where God says he has a plan. And so now I'm a born-again grandma virgin, too, despite 3 illegitimate children from 5 different fathers. I'm a born-again, I'm saving myself this time. Oh, I spread my legs for Jose and Jerome and Thaddeus. But this time I mean it. This time I had reconstructive hymen surgery. I really mean it this time. This time I'm serious. And I'm a virgin. You should treat me like that. Forget that I have stretch marks and C-section, you know, staples and scars. I'm a virgin all over again in my 36-year-old wrinkly, scarred-up stomach ass.
Jesus, where'd we go on that one? Our good friend Undertow. Go to Undertow Audio. Undertow spelled under, T-O-W, like towing a car, audio.com. I'm having him do the recording for Curse of the High IQ. That's under the works. He also does some recordings of some of my finer blog pieces. And if you're looking for someone for audio work who's got a nice voice, please consider hiring our buddy Undertow. You could go to undertowaudio.com. I want to point out once again to Chris Beckloff, do you see how the free happenings and the bartering of this occur? I just want to point that out right there. I will once again say, my favorite podcast is Beckloff's Geeking Out with the Beckloff. It's like I said before on the previous podcast, if you're done and you're sick and tired of politics, you just want a little bit of politics, but then you want to like let your mind go into the world of video games, comic books, and movies, and fun, and just a good cadre of people talking and sparring intellectually, please go do that. Oh, related to that, I have to thank Ann Sturzinger. Ann Sturzinger at AnnSturzinger.com. She sent me back an edited version of Curse of the High IQ. And I'm not joking, guys. This gal, God bless her. She has books, please. Please go and visit Ann Sturzinger. She has several books out. And I knew she was an author, but I had no idea how good. Like, for all of you guys that wish I could have the grammar and the correct spellings if you guys, for those of you that read my books and you tolerate it because you're more for the ideas than you are the grammar, but you wince in pain reading it occasionally because you're like, really? Read Anne's books, because the girl went through this book, and honestly, for me to make all these changes would take longer for me to make the changes than to write the entire book all over again. And this is why I have very few select people edit my books. I only look for genuine mistakes, genuine typos. And this book, I mean, seriously, it's like seeing my English teacher all over again, except this English teacher is nice and actually kind of attractive, too. Not an evil bitch from hell who was too lazy. Actually, Anne, unlike all English teachers, wrote several books. She is actually an author, which English teachers never become because teachers can't do. They can only teach. But thank you, Anne. I don't think I'm going to make any of these changes because it is insane. And she put so much work into this, obviously. Although what scares me is, like, she could be one of those people, like, this took her 5 minutes to do. You know those weird freaks of nature? They could read a book in, like, 5 minutes. I get people, and I do apologize to all you people out there, you aspiring authors, of which I encourage you to do it just as long as you're not this millennial douche writing a pamphlet. I've had people say, will you review my book? And I'm like, look, I would love to review your book, but I am a very slow reader. Like, I can maybe read a page a minute. And if you're looking at a, you know, 200-page book, a 300-page book, what is that? Six, and that's a five-hour thing. And that's 5 hours of my time. And that's going to be $500. And it's not that I don't want to read it. I wish I could. I just don't like reading. I really don't. There's so much other stuff to do in life. And now that we got audiobooks coming out, of which Bachelor Pad Economics, I had to call up audible.com and say, hey, what the hell is going on? Like, oh, you look into it. I can't say that. The lady was very nice. The girl's name was Deborah. She was actually very helpful. But, you know, once again, it gets back to the point like, okay, what person screwed this up this time? Because it wasn't the computer. It's a person. So there's some person over there screwing it up. I'm just saying with Audible books, that's the way I'd go. There's no reason. I don't understand reading. Why would you read? Why would you sit in one place when there's so much else to do in life. And you can put the head, especially now with the technology, you have audible books. I got that. I can see it. But even before, like, what? It's not the old argument I always presented when I was a kid to my parents to excuse myself not reading. I'm like, they're just going to make a movie of it anyway. Which invariably proved true, but at the time I didn't know back in the 80s. I don't know, I hope they do make it, because otherwise my argument is bogus. Which, it really wouldn't have mattered, because my parents were like, this is a bogus argument. And you're going to read this book anyway. But I hate reading! People with ADHD, 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 or I just call it a high IQ, and shit going on in their lives, that's what I call ADHD people. It's like, we got stuff to do, and we know we're finite, and we're hustling and moving, and we don't want to sit. How can you sit and read a book? I've never understood that. These people, I've known several, they can sit and they can devour a book and they actually look forward to reading books. I just want to curl up with a nice book. What the hell is wrong with you? There's so much going on outside. We could go bowling. We could go skeet shooting. We could go kayaking. We could go rappelling. We could climb rocks. We could gamble. We could get drunk. We could fish. There's so much more going on in life than sitting there reading a book. And I know, there's the intellectual component. Your brain is challenged. You're engaged. New ideas. You go to your happy place, all you weird freaks. It's better in the book because your imagination will create a much more colorful... I don't want my brain to create an imagination world. I want to go out into the real world, see it, and then I want to see the movie. I'm like, oh, that's what it looked like. Okay. Although I will admit, there was this Pentology, is that what it's called? Lord of the Rings, The High King, Lloyd Alexander. That's my favorite author. And like the first and only real bit of fiction I've ever really read. I'm sure I've read other fiction, but Lloyd Alexander. Lloyd Alexander, American author. Is he still alive? Oh, shoot, he died in 2007. Oh, I wish. Yeah, The Chronicles of Prydain. Series of five high fantasy novels whose conclusion, The High King, was awarded the 1969 Newbery Medal for Excellence. Yeah, so what was he? 69, 2014. So he was 45 when he was writing these. He was in his 40s. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, how much you want to bet this guy... Yeah, he was in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. How much you want to bet this guy, like, had his heyday in the 60s and 70s, made all of his money, you know, was infinitely wealthy. He was set to go. And as the consumers of his books grew old, they kind of forgot about him. And in the back of the mind, like, also, oh, maybe, you know, like, I wonder if he wouldn't have appreciated a visit from one of his fans. Like, well, that's a great book series that you wrote. I really... And it was good. The Prydain series was really good. Look at that. That's his first one. Alexander was born in Philadelphia in 1924. Grew up in Drexel Hill, a western suburb. Father was a stockbroker, and the farm he was very much affected by the Great Depression. Parents read only newspapers, but they did buy books at the Salvation Army to fill up the empty shelves. Lloyd was a reader of books, Shakespeare, Dickens, Mark Twain, and so many other were my dearest friends and greatest teachers. I loved all the world's mythologies. King Arthur was one of my heroes, he said. By 15, he determined to be a writer. His parents found him a practical job as a bank messenger, which inspired a satire that would become his first book published 15 years later, and Let the Credit Go, 1955. He graduated at age 16 in 1940 from Upper Darby High School. All right, see, he's already ahead of the curve right there. He graduated 2 years early. He hated school, too. Where he was inducted into the school's Wall of Fame in 1995. He went to Haverford College. Did he join the military? Alexander judged that adventure, not college, was the best school for a writer, and that U.S. Army participation in World War II was an opportunity. The Army shipped him to Texas, where he played the cymbals in band and the organ in chapel. He received combat intelligence training in Maryland, then in Wales, before late wartime deployment in western and southern borderlands of Germany that had been conquered. He rose to staff sergeant in intelligence and counterintelligence. No boring people in this world, guys. No boring people. Oh, look at this. Oh, here, you want a heart? Here's a tearjerker for you guys. Alexander died on May 17th, 2007, 2 weeks after the death of his wife of 61 years. Oh, How sad, yeah, isn't that sad to see it go like that? I mean, well, it's sad, but it's nice, you know, like they kept each other alive. That's the, and then his wife was no longer around. He's like, I got nothing left to live for. My step-grandparents, that kind of happened. The grandma died, and then not much later, the grandpa died. And you knew those two were keeping each other alive. And they were happy, they, but it's the same thing here. Oh, that's the way to go, isn't it? Love of your life goes, and you're just like, fuck it. I got nothing else going on. 61 years. I met a couple last night on my dance class, and they were married 35 years. And you think, wow, that's crazy. But then my aunt and uncle, I just celebrated this past weekend when I was in Milwaukee. They celebrated 50, but ain't nobody doing that. But man, you get 61 years, and then 2 weeks after your wife dies, you die? Oh. That's charming. It's just charming. You got to salute the guy. That's the way to go, man. That is the way to go. I know you virgin towers won't understand that, but I mean, that is the way to go. That's I got to tell you. So I picked up teaching dance classes again, only because I was bored and I wanted to like basically stop drinking and I needed to occupy myself with doing something. And so, for whatever, one of my old contacts over at St. Paul, she says, hey, look, we got an emergency opening for a dance instructor. Would you mind teaching two classes? And I said, yeah, sure, fine. And I don't think I did this charitably because I owe them. I owe community ed. I owe all these ladies at community ed my life because they were there back in my 20s and made it so that I could actually live. I never had to go on welfare. I taught dance class, so these gals were, and they were sharp. They were professional. I've mentioned this before, but I'm mentioning it again. These gals in community education, even though I'm dead set against the concept like community education, we don't need that. They could be done by the private sector. These ladies were sharp. They were on their freaking game. Way better than the private sector people I've ever worked with. Well, then again, I was in banking, so that's not exactly an efficient industry. Regardless, he says, hey, we had one of our teachers drop out. Can you teach? I said, yeah, sure. And they said, well, what do you need for payment? I'm like, I don't know. Just give me whatever. I don't care. I'm just doing this for myself to get out. Well, then I find out they're going to give me like a W-9 and I'm going to have to do taxes. I'm going to have to fill out forms. Like, dude, don't even pay me. All right. It's not worth it. The number of students they're going to have, it ain't like the olden days where I was like, make it. There was a couple days. Well, not a couple, 5 days. The highest ever paying days, the highest enrollment I ever had. I was making $1,100 a night. Very short-lived. I wish that could continue on forever, but it didn't. But what the fuck is going on? Who is making this noise? Oh, Jesus Christ. Is it me going viral? No, it's just people, like, sending me crap and pictures of kittens. All right, turn this shit down. There. Like I said, they know when I'm recording, and they know when that, let's send Clary crappy pictures of cats hanging on clothesline saying, hang in there. Where was I? Anyway, so I said, yeah, I'll go teach for free, you know, whatever. And I still got it. Still got old cat that still got it. I was a little bit worried, like, do I really remember all this stuff? Yeah, I'm good. And, but to drive out there this last time, I always go out early. I knew to do that to avoid rush hour. So I always go and I park, myself over at a cigar lounge over in Lilydale called Perfect Ash. If you're ever in the Twin Cities and you want to kill me, come visit. Because there's what? FBI. There's, a bunch of cops. An ex-police chief. And, former Secret Service. Please come in there and try and take a hit on me. Please visit anytime you want, enemies. Come to the Perfect Ash in Lilydale. Please try and make it hit. See if you make it out of there alive. So I go there and I wait for the thing because it's just right across the river in St. Paul. I shoot across, take the secret way to downtown, cut in the back road. Boom, I'm in the parking lot, and then I go teach my class. Well, I'd made the mistake. I had a bunch of asshole consulting to do yesterday. And all of a sudden it was like 3:30. I'm like, I better get going. I gotta make it south. Oh. And look, I have not commuted in forever. I'm trying to think if I ever really, I did have kind of a real commute back in the 90s, but ever since then, I always made sure that I was either living near where I worked. No, I take that back. My worst commute was going from Minneapolis to, what was it, out on the west? Atham, look this up. What is that town over on the west? No, east, east. Not Oakdale. What the hell is it? Radio Flyer Drive. I know the name of the street. I don't know the town. Why don't I know this town? Woodbury. Right before you get to Wisconsin. So that was a pain in the ass commute. I'm never doing this again. So I always ended up living relatively close to where I commute. Now that's been 10 years. 10 years since I had a real commute. So this is the first time I through too much work, ended up, oh, I'm a little late. And my God, guys, I remember in the Twin Cities in the mid and early 90s, you could drive across the Twin Cities during rush hour and make it in about 45 minutes. Hour and a half to go halfway from the WBL down to St. Paul. And you couldn't even take the, you couldn't take, I tried doing highway, I did the 35E. But then I had to switch over to Highway 61 and even 61. And every time I had to go and make a move, I'd like, there'd be people backed up to get onto the on-ramps, which would then clog up the side streets. So you had to take these neighborhood roads. Hour and a half. And that was the most efficient because I still got it. I still know how the roads are laid out. And we got on top of it. I was looking at the map. I'm like, what the hell? Hour and a half. And it just... Not only did it remind me of what I was missing out on, not only did it show me how much worse traffic has gotten in the Twin Cities, but it's the sad testament that you people tolerate this. Not my listeners, I know, but the sheeple out there, the lemmings, you'll swallow anything. Nobody thinks. Nobody has standards. Nobody has self-respect. You guys will just take whatever society gives you. You never ask. You never say, oh, is this worth it? Shouldn't we try and change things? Like, this is a democracy. We should be able to change things. We should vote to stop giving money to the welfare bums over in North Minneapolis, not Northeast. Those are the education bums. We should stop giving money to students to major in the liberal arts. We should stop giving money to the ghetto trash. We should stop giving money to the trailer trash in Anoka. We should stop giving money to the barrio trash over on Franklin. And we should build roads. Then it doesn't. No. Let's all just be polite, and instead of holding people up to standards and telling people that horrible two-letter word no, let's all just suffer and waste our lives away a little bit more while we sit here and kill ourselves effectively, metaphorically, on the highways, in the commutes. And I have been so out of the system that I can see it for what it is. I step back, like, I'm not part of the Borg. I have not had my mind slowly. I'm not the frog sitting in that pan that slowly gets hotter and hotter. And you idiots, you sheeple out there, are stuck in this boiling frying pan. Like, oh, well, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, it's not as bad as L.A., where their lives, literally, I'm not joking, their lives are based off of what is happening in traffic. We can't go because of traffic. We're stuck here because of traffic. Don't leave now because of traffic. I better leave early because traffic. I better leave late because traffic. It is amazing how traffic just makes all you Californians their bitch. You are traffic's bitch. That's all you guys are. You are slaves to the freaking traffic, which ultimately means that you're slaves to the welfare class that you've created, because if you kept building roads like they do in Dallas, you wouldn't, you mean, really, look at it. Not only are you paying more in taxes, but you're giving up what? What percentage of your waking hours? At least 10% of your waking time commuting? More like maybe 20%? And how much impaired and lack of freedom you people have in California because you've decided to be good little leftists and go and piss away a ton of money on parasites and not build roads? Not allow commerce and freedom to occur? You can't even allow for the basic thing of transportation and movement? Well, you know, it's just over. Whatever sociological traffic studies doctorate bullshit the excuse they give. Well, you see, because of the things and that and global, I don't care what your excuses are. I don't care. If this was 1940s America, we'd have 8-lane highways on each side. There'd be no rush hour. There'd be no commute. If we had true genuine, I mean, I'll go back once again, that if we really had corporate social responsibility, you corporations who claim to be all green and everything, you'd be pursuing telecommuting like no other, because that would actually lessen the amount of carbon emissions drastically. You guys would be, right now, it is within the control of corporate America to get rid of the commute. If corporate America decided, it would take maybe a week or a month to have their IT guys set up some VPNs or RDPs, let a lot of people telecommute in. You guys could end traffic jams tomorrow. You could end rush hour within a month. But you don't, because you're a bunch of baby boomer control freaks and you're dumber than fuck. I know. Asshole Consulting is why. That's, I mean, if you want to talk to me, please talk to me at assholeconsulting.com. I'll make your employee. You want to increase employee retention? Corporate executive type baby boomer HR cunts? Why don't you come talk to Asshole Consulting? Oh, no, he said cunt and he cursed. Oh, he's arrogant and cocky. We don't want to hire him. We're just going to force our entire 100,000 employee staff to commute every year while hypocritically claiming to be for the environment while we, what, pollute, however they measure tons of carbon emissions. Yeah, yeah, okay, whatever. Ham, talk to it. Go fuck yourself. So much for the curse-free podcast. Forgot where I was going. What the hell was I talking about? Oh, so I'm driving, and I just like, this is unacceptable. It's not acceptable. I know you people make it acceptable, I know, but for a guy who's been out of the system, step back, someone who's not part of the Borg, I'm like, guys, you're part of the Borg. Wake up. This is not tolerable. I mean, traffic is literally, I think it's gotten, now maybe I just had a bad day of traffic. Maybe I got statistically unlucky, but seriously, the commute was twice as bad as it's been the last time I drove it. And I don't know how you guys accept this. Well, I understand you've been brainwashed and conditioned by media and education and just corporate. This is just what you do. If your commute increases, you know, 2 minutes a year, do you really notice that small incremental? That's less than a second a month. No, that's more than that. That's like 10 seconds a month. Do you really notice that? Do you? All of a sudden, over 20 years, that's an extra 40 minutes. You know, you did it, man. You didn't think it did it. I won't even credit you with having a vocabulary for genuine words, because there's no words to utter, because you don't have an argument. It's just, you know, so it is. We're hopeless Americans. Oh, never mind what the country was founded on and how we are determining our own destiny. Oh, it's just what it is. Always more taxes, because I don't want to be called a racist or a sexist. We just need more money. More money for the government. Oh, no, we don't need roads. We need a choo-choo train. What have we spent between the stadiums and the ballparks and our two choo-choo trains? I mean, what? Hang on, let's do that. And they got a new choo-choo train, a third line going in. Total cost, light rail, Minnesota. Metro Blue Line. The Hiawatha Light Rail Disaster. National Review. What year is this? Cost more than $20 million a year to operate. Well, that's the million. That's the operating cost. I want to know what we sank into it. Shocker cost. I don't know how old this is. 2013. Okay. Because bike path, man, 3 feet of snow, blah, blah, blah. The light rail project is projected to cost Oh, this is the new line. Oh, and this one's more than that. Now it's $2 billion. Let's just say $5 billion. What does $5 billion get you in terms of high interstate? How much does a mile of interstate cost? Highway construction costs. Cost per mile, railroad versus highway. Okay. I'm sure this varies. What is this? This is New Jersey. Well, I don't have documentation stating such individual product. The rule of thumb I heard, Southern California is approximately $200 million a mile to add one lane each way to an existing freeway. Well, that's California. That's like insanely expensive. New 8-lane interstate class highway in the U.S., about $50 million per mile on flat land, aside from land acquisition costs, which, of course, vary. Okay, so $50 million. Let's do the math here. I don't want you idiots coming in saying, it's $1.7 million, it's $2.5 million. I'm just saying, okay, we... $1 billion for the Twin Stadium, another billion for the... we tore down the perfectly good Metrodome, $2 billion for the light rail out to Eden Prairie. Oh, hang on. What's sad is this back of napkins economic stuff is probably more accurate than the high level analysis real economists do. Cost, Minneapolis, St. Paul, light rail. Billions. This is how you search. The Green Line. 11 mile connects Central Business District of Minneapolis, St. Paul. Funding, proposals, history. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, about $1 billion. 70 million. Construction. Okay, best figure is $1 billion for that. Let's add $1 billion there. And then we have our own little choo-choo train that goes from Minneapolis to Mall of America. The Blue Line. Oh, line carried, funding, and delays. Line's total cost of $1 billion within from outcome of the federal government. Okay, all right, so that's, we're not including the federal. They see, they think that because it comes from federal taxpayers that that's free money, even though Minnesota people pay it and then every other state is screwing us over. Like, ha, look how much we got from the other 49 states. And like, and every other state's doing the exact same thing. So that was a building. Of course, you never know. There was another article here. Southwest Corridor light rail costs explode. And this is from Star Tribune, a leftist. Oh, this is the other one. It costs, okay, so it's $2 billion. Let's just say another $1 billion for that. Okay, we add this all up. Some. Okay, $6 billion. Okay, so 6,000 millions equals that divided by 50. How many miles? We could have got 120 miles of extra lanes. That would have easily added to the 494, 694. So we could have upgraded all of our highways, pretty much adding on an extra lane, and that would have totally helped out with congestion and traffic. But no, we got to have a little choo-choo trains. We have to have several choo-choo trains because liberal leftist fucktards don't know anything about logic and common sense. Because it's like, it's plastic bags, it's fashionable, we're doing choo-choo trains. I have my doctorate in public administration, and it says choo-choo trains. That was the late, so what is that like when you get your master's or your doctorate in public administration? Like, there's like an 8,000 level class, it's called choo-choo trains, and that's the most advanced, like, kind of nouveau riche, whatever. Because it's fashionable, not practical. Because that's what you idiots are like, ah, never mind. Why am I talking about it? I got a guy on the inside who used to work on the highway or the Southwest Trail Commission. And my gosh, you want to talk about a pissing away of time, resources, and money. You want to talk about seeing sausage made. And like, if I ever get into office, I'm not going to hear people out. I don't care. We're ending it. You guys are wasting your money, you're wasting people's times, you're wasting people's tax dollars, none of you are doing real work. All he did was sit in meetings, that's it. There was no actual real work done. The guy had sometimes 12 hours a day of meetings. Because we have to take insight and input from this community group, we have to take insight and input from that community group, and we're going to have meetings. They literally had meetings about meetings. They literally did, meetings about meetings. Oh yeah. Don't tell me there's no fat not to cut over in the public sector. All right, let's get a little bit more in terms of the sponsors here. Pushing Rubber Downhill by Adam Piggott. The book available in three flavors: paperback, Kindle, and Audible. Read by our good friend Davis Arini, which you can visit at staresattheworld.com. By the way, Welcome to the Divide by SP Daily. You could find that on Amazon. Daniel Allman, 1,202 well-sourced examples of Obama's law-breaking corruption, etc., etc. It's a very long title. Please just go to captaincapitalism.blogspot.com. Take a look at the image banner. Click on that, and you're probably going to want to buy it and have it on store for a reference book Because when people say, okay, give me an example of Obama's constitution breaking, and you're like, oh shit, there's been so many, I can't remember, you know, like, name how many times the quarterback's been sacked. Like, they kind of blur together. Well, now you have a list, quite a comprehensive list, of all Obama's wrongdoing. The Black Man's Guide Out of Poverty, written by me, available in paperback and Kindle. Bachelor Pad Economics, also available in paperback and Kindle. And soon to be audio, if the world ever... You want to talk about a lesson where the number one problem in the world is people and why you should never hire people. It's not that the computers went down. It's not that. The only reason for this delay has been people. I don't know who's over at audible.com that has been holding this up, but I've done everything. I've done lots of things. And so now I'm just waiting. You do work. What's sad? This is the private sector. Me. Happy. We also have Worthless. That's available in all three formats. Audible, paperback, and Kindle. Enjoy the decline, accepting and living with the death of the United States. And Behind the Housing Crash, my first book, if you want, I don't know. You want a Sam Spade kind of, she walked in the thing with the stuff in the room. Said, hey, sugar tits, how you doing? She says, oh, Detective Jones, I need a strong man to protect me. Good thing I had a gun because I'm a short, skinny guy. I would make a lousy Sam Spade, wouldn't I? Although now I think about it, Humphrey Bogart wasn't that big of a guy, was he? I mean, he was always kind of rail thin. Let's look this up. That camera really helps out. Humphrey Bogart. Height, weight. I bet you he was just like me. 5'8", there you go. 150 pounds. I'm 5'9", 1.5 inches. I weigh 150 pounds, the same as when I was 19. Believe it or not, I just don't gain weight or lose. Bogey, the good bad guy, 1965. Absolutely. Bogart was slighter than I'd imagined. 5'10.5". Okay, so he's a little taller than me. I was telling some of my students, yeah, here he is, 5'8". Yeah, he's just a rail. See, skinny guys like us can fake being tough guys on the screen. Oh. Yeah, I was telling him I still fit into my old. I bought a tuxedo back when I was in college. Let me tell you guys a story. You guys want a story? Then we'll get back to the podcast and the sponsors. When I was young and stupid, I mean 18 years old, young and stupid. No, I was 19 because it was I got a tuxedo in spring. My buddy Dave, who I will forever be thankful and grateful for because he got me into jazz, which would not have gotten me into dancing, which would not have sent me down this wonderful path that I call my life. Oh, shit, David, I hate you. No, I'm kidding. He taught me class, or at least introduced me to class. And he says, hey, over in Crystal, which is a town, there's like this used, you know, tuxedo rental place, and every year they sell their tuxedos. And I said, he says, you should probably go get one because it'd be a good thing to have in your inventory for fashion. I said, yeah. And I said to my dad, that makes sense. So I scraped together some bucks I was working at that time. I thought this would be a wise investment. So I found just a standard black and white Cary Grant tuxedo. Standard black and white. And my stupidity, my ignorance, my foolishness, of course, I didn't know it at the time, was that I thought that when I became an adult, I was going to be like Cary Grant. You know, I was going to be like Humphrey Bogart, or more, maybe not so much Humphrey Bogart, but more of a Gregory Peck, Cary Grant type guy. You know, I was going to take girls to the symphony. I was going to take girls to the opera. So I would be attending black tie events, and I would need to go to formals. I was going to go to galas. That's what old Captain used to think when he was this stupid, idealistic, romantic type guy. Yeah, taking girls to Victor Borga, for example. So I had my tuxedo, and, you know, it was kind of like my first trip to Vegas, of which I think I was like 29 or 30, where I thought everybody dressed in a suit, you know, because I watched Ocean's 11, the original and the new one. I'm like, oh, yeah, people dress sexy. And I land, and it's just a bunch of fat people from Wisconsin and fat Asian people all wearing Hawaiian shirts and sandals, and then people thought I was a pit boss. I told you guys that story before, right? No? So I was all decked out in my best suit. And then you learn, and you also learn, like when you go to the symphony or the opera, at least in Minnesota, people are wearing jeans to orchestra hall. There's no dress code. There's no classy places. There's this restaurant called Azure, and I desperately wanted to go there. I did go there for my 19th birthday, because they said, where do you want to go? I said, I want to go to Azure. And I thought this was like this long established place. No, it was a flash in the pan type of restaurant. It was over on Nicollet Mall. And I think they closed down the year later. I'm like, well, what happened? And that taught me. It taught me. There is no class. There is no long-term, timeless class. The days of men and women, like you see those pictures in the 30s and the 40s, even though it was the Great Recession or the Great Depression, people still wore their best. They wore their suits. The women wore dresses. The men wore hats. Yeah, that's all gone. So I thought there was still that piece of the world somewhere left. I thought, oh, it's got to be at the orchestra and the symphony because that's where classy people go. And I walk in, and I'm the only schmuck in a tuxedo. I made the poor date dressed in a dress. And we, oh, they thought we were cute. Oh, weren't we the butt end of all jokes? Oh, look at the cute little thing. They're trying to be adults. Look, they're trying to adult. Oh. Oh, and then it was just like, why did I have this tuxedo? Why did I get this? Every great once in a while, back when there was that big renaissance of swing dancing, there was a couple places where the tuxedo was called for, and that absolutely made it worth it. I walked in, I looked like $1 million, you know. Michael Bublé's song, I'm Feeling Good, playing in the background. You look, yeah, I mean, you just felt like James frickin' Bond. But that was rare. And now I don't know I don't think I've worn my tuxedo in about 7 or 8 years. But based on other suits that I've had, I still fit in it. I still fit in my tuxedo that I bought back in what, 1994, back when I was 19. And they were saying, like, I forget how it happened, but we were talking about it. I said, yeah, I still fit in my tuxedo back in college. Like, when I was less than half my age, I still fit in that tuxedo. That should be the goal of pretty much every guy. That really should be. You know, out of respect for the women you love or any women you'd like to date, you should at least be able to fit back into your old high school or college clothes. I'm not saying you gotta be ripped. I'm not saying you gotta be a perfect elitist like the genetic experiment gone right, Leaf or Denver Ben. But at least you should be able to be svelte enough, not have a gut, and fit into any old college suits or tuxedos you might have had. That should be it. That we owe it for. Look, if we're gonna pick on fat women, we're gonna mock and joke, ah ha ha, great personality. We're gonna demand that out of the way. What? We just get to sit here look like fat mafioso Italian guys? Well, fat mafioso Italian guys have millions of dollars, and they can buy what they want. And unless you don't, if you don't have millions of dollars, well, guess what? The least you could do is at least not get fat. That should be the rule. I think that'll be the new rule. I'm going to hey, you got to fit in to your old college clothes. Although now that I think about it, see, the women gain the college 15 because they're spoiled. Well, this is going back 20 years ago. I wonder if the college 15 is like now the college 30. And for men, if that even matters anymore, because like the men lost weight. Of course, I was working, you know, U of M campus security, so we were biking and running, so we actually lost weight. I wonder if that's kind of unfair, if most men, let's take a look, what, geez, you know, maybe we got this internet thing that we could look up. Do college students lose weight? 70% of students gain weight during college. Okay. So things haven't changed. This is 2012. Ah, fall. The air turns cooler. Leaves are falling. And thousands of college students are partying, snacking, pulling all-nighters, and about to pack on the infamous freshman 15. In the first study to examine weight changes during 4 years of college, however, research suggests that weight gain during the pursuit of higher education may go well beyond the first year and could be a bigger health threat. The parents that Auburn University, down where the Ludwig von Mises Institute is, followed 131 students over 4 years. And found that a whopping 70% of them packed on pounds by graduation, an average of 12 and up to 37 pounds. The overall percentage of students found to be overweight increased from 18% to 31%. See, I'm wondering how this compares based on generation, like World War II versus baby boomers versus Gen X versus millennials. And I think people would be getting fatter as they've been getting lazier, because the general tendency is for obesity to go up. The new study published in Applied Physiology, Nutrition, and Metabolism, which I subscribe to weekly, don't you guys? Flies in the face of previous studies, which found that the average student gains merely 2 to 3.5 pounds and accused the media of fomenting the freshman 15 myth. But the researchers in Auburn study observed that the growth they found in college students consisted primarily of fat mass, meaning natural growth patterns could not account for it. They attributed the weight gain to late-night studying habits, often fueled by vending snacks machines, fending choices of college cafeterias, and a lack of activity. Oh, all you posers demanding that we have gluten-free and vegan and all these other dieting options. And none of you actually follow it. Here, Psychology Today, which is the people magazine of the psychology profession. Debunking the myth. Oh, see, now you know we got contradictory. Which is it? Do we gain or do we lose? Freshman weight gain was apparently first noticed in the literature in the mid-1980s in an article by Hovell and colleagues. Sounds like a great band, you know? Hovell and colleagues! Ladies and gentlemen, the funny antics of... These researchers compared women living on campus with a comparable sample of freshmen living in the community. They found those freshmen living on campus were almost three times as likely as the community sample to gain weight, but by their junior year, they were almost back to baseline levels. Ba body body boo biggity biggity bum. Come on, 2013. Dr. Brian Wasnick and his group at the Dyson School of Applied Economics and Management at Cornell University, Ithaca. That doesn't have the same ring for a band, does it? Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Brian Wasnick and his group from the Dyson School of Applied Economics and Management at Cornell University, Ithaca. Give it up! Doesn't have the same ring. Not opening up for the Rolling Stones anytime soon. Unhealthy things. This is bottom line. I'm glad I only had to like scroll and skim through like 8 pages. Potential weight gain is understandably a realistic concern for freshman college students, often more for women than men, as they make the transition from school to home. Unrealistic. Well, you got no numbers! Fucking psychology majors. Is it hard to do math? Is it really that hard? I knew a gal getting her doctorate in psychology. She had to do a lot of statistics. Do you guys not use those skills? Or is it just my feels? Oh... Top Shelf and Reserve, those are my best of the blog. You can find that on Amazon.com as well. Captain Capitalism Top Shelf and Captain Capitalism Reserved. People don't like the covers. Screw yourselves, I don't care. If you're looking for a joke, go to Day by Day Cartoon. Search that on the internet. Our good friend Chris Muir. Silvio Canto's book, Cubanos in Wisconsin, you can find that on Amazon. As well as you can find Davis Arini's As I Walk These Broken Roads and Marty Zandrotti's Nixon Guides to the Multiverse. And that's that. There we go. I think we did the sponsors for the day. Oh, what we got? Oh, hang on. Here we go. Let's get some news.
Now, listen, man. I like the news. You guys like the news?
Not really so much a vital news story, but just an observation I had. Augsburg Identify. Augsburg is a college just south of the U of M in Minneapolis, kind of a crappy private school, like, you've never heard of it, and that's why, because it's kind of a crappy school. Augsburg identifies mystery donor who gave $10 million cash for new center. Augsburg College has named the donors who gave $10 million to put their name on in the Minneapolis College's new center for science, business, and religion. There are two things that contradict each other there. Norm and Evangeline Hagfors were behind the cash gift, which is tied for being the largest in the school's history with another anonymous donation in 2013. The Hagford Center for Science, Business, and Religion will house the college's biology, business, chemistry, computer science, math, physics, psychology, and religion programs. The $50 million fundraising campaign for the new center closed a year ahead of schedule in May 2015. A groundbreaking is scheduled for Friday afternoon. All right, look, the old captain here. You're going in life. If you have $10 million to donate to a college, your goal in life should not be to have a business or a building. In fact, business, it would actually make sense. But a building? You have a building named after you? Like, seriously, go to any college campus. Go to any campus, private or public. I mean, do you guys know the name, the first name of the guy of the Carlson School of Management? Do you guys know who he is? No, you don't know who he is. His first name is Kurt. Does it matter? No, still a shitty school. And he started, what did he start? He started, like, TGI Fridays, which is in Minnesota. He started some other Kurt Carlson Traveling Company. Like, he's the local entrepreneurs. He's no Zuckerberg. He's no Bill Gates. He's like our local crappy. Here's the best billionaire local guy we could come up with. And we named a school after him. The Anderson School of Business down in L.A. Do you guys know who that is? I don't know who that is. And they're all general names. The Carlson, the Andersons, the Johnson. I mean, the Carlson School of Management is so pathetic. They have rooms that are actually named after not even people, but businesses that bought the rooms or paid to have it spot. The Pillsbury Room. The Piper Jaffray Room. And the problem that you face for, there's two major problems that all you old people who are like, I want my name in a building. One, it's an oversupply of named buildings. Nobody knows it. Falwell Hall at the University of Minnesota. I don't know who Falwell was. Let's look it up, shall we? This guy Falwell, or gal, we don't know. He's getting more advertising now. More information, more people will learn about Falwell today than in the past 10 years or maybe even 20 years, because no one gives a crap who Falwell is. Falwell Hall, University of Minnesota. Falwell. Okay, let's see who this was named after. If they even mention who it is. Falwell Hall. Falwell Hall. Nobody tells us anything. See, you don't even, you can't even look it up. That's how unknown these people are. Who was? Falwell Hall, Benning is a historic icon. Named after. Show more text. William Watts Falwell, first president of the University of Minnesota. Let's look up this guy. What did he do? Did he do anything great? Aside from just being a university professor? Uh-oh, white guy. Oh, we can't have that. William Watts Falwell was an educator, writer, and historian who was the first president of the University of Minnesota. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, did you guys know that? No, of course you don't. I, how many people go to the University of Minnesota don't even know that's named after the first president? So my question, so that's the one thing. There's just this glut, this supply of names that have been applied to buildings. Nobody knows what it is. Nobody cares. The second thing is, do you really want a building like that's your legacy? A building that's invariably going to be torn down because we can't have new and pretty buildings. We've got to have old crappy old pretty buildings. We have new crappy ones thrown up. Like, what is that legacy? You're named at, no one knows who you are. Write a book. Build a business, employ people, develop a cure, something, some kind of creation or innovation. But merely to have your name put on a building, or even worse, sometimes you run around these lakes, these people have benches made in their memorial. Oh yeah, that's how I want to go down. I got millions of dollars. Oh, they named a bench after me over on Lake Harriet. I mean, already, here's how sad. I'm nowhere near a millionaire. I don't think I'll ever come near to being a millionaire. I'll die a pauper, right? But at least there's something left. There's some books. There's some videos. There's advice. There's wisdom. At minimum, there's entertainment or agitation. Can you give me that? Agitation. I piss people off. Can we at least, I rise people's blood pressure. I get them to think a little bit. They don't even have to know my name, but at least we have advanced philosophy and helped advance people's lives a little bit. Save them some pain and agony. Oh, hey, this millionaire, he had a wing at the library named after him. Ooh. I suppose for you academians and you government people who've never achieved anything in life, like, you know, the Bill Clinton Library, the Ronald Reagan Library. Okay, I will admit, having an aircraft carrier named after you, that's tits. That is 100 big double D titty McTick-tits. That is awesome. Okay, to have an aircraft carrier, that's pretty ballsy. All right, I'll grant you that. Okay, that's pretty cool. The USS Ronald Reagan. Oh, but a building, a wing, and you haven't really done any. I mean, that's it. That's what you're aiming for because your life has been such nothing. Senator Joe Blow. Oh, this building's named after, oh, this bridge is named after a senator. Who cares? What did they do? No, oh, you named a bridge. You named a wing. You named a building. And unless there's an actual achievement attached to it, a genuine bit of legacy, that's not a legacy. That's a piece of material that has your name on it, the last name, and no one's going to bother looking it up. Seriously, for what, 20-odd years that I've known of the U of M and known of Falwell Hall, I never looked it up. Edmondson Hall, don't know who it is. The only reason I know Kurt Carlson is because they keep shoving it in. Hey, Kurt Carlson, he started TGR Fridays. Yeah. How lame is that, that that's like what the school is named after? Hey, he started a restaurant and a travel agency. Ooh. What is he? Is he even alive? Not to constantly look thing. I just want to show you how pathetic it is. Kurt Carlson. Carlson. Kurt Carlson. Died in 1999. See, I didn't even know the guy was alive. Born in Minneapolis, blah, blah, blah. Founded the Gold Bond Stamp Company in 1938. Training stamps to incentive grocery stores. First entrepreneur to develop a loyalty program for grocery store chains for the issuance of trading stamps. Carlson expanded his offerings by purchasing the downtown Minneapolis Radisson Hotel in 1960 and building it into a national chain. Oh, he expanded the Radissons, huh? He also acquired TGI Fridays, Carlson Leisure Group, and hundreds of other hospitality businesses. Family to gather. Blah. Yeah, I mean, okay, he's an entrepreneur, but he ain't no freaking rock star. What's the Anderson building down in UCLA, Anderson School? This is like a big, UCLA Anderson, that's like a big school. One of the 11 professional schools, financial engineering, PhD, blah, blah, blah. History. UC Regents, 1935. Named after John E. Anderson, class of 1940, who donated $15 million to the school and prompted the construction of a new complex. That's it? I can have a whole school named after me if I donate $15 million bucks? Oh, he later donated an additional $25 million. In May of 2015, Marian Anderson, widow of the late John Anderson, announced a $100 million donation to the school to be used for fellowships, research, and part of a new bill. Boy, these people really want their names, huh? They really want their names. Who's this Johnny Anderson? Johnny Anderson was president and sole shareholder of Topa Equities Limited. What the hell? That's even worse than Carlson. Oversaw more than 40 wholly owned subsidiaries in diverse industries such as agriculture, automotive dealerships, insurance, real estate, oil, and wholesale beverage distribution. In 2006, he was ranked 189th. Net worth, $1.9 billion. Died 93. Well, he lived a long life. Oh, he was born in Minneapolis, too. Born in a leftist shithole, moved out and started his company in a leftist shithole. And got taxed along the way and then still gave his money to a bunch of leftists who couldn't even teach themselves real entrepreneurship if their lives depended on it. Oh, philanthropy. Donated $50 million. $42 million. Loyola School. Oh, Chicago. God almighty, personal life. UCLA sweetheart. Oh, see, so he went to UCLA. Margaret died of cancer. Oh! Oh, that's horrible. His first wife died so early in 1965. Oh, his daughter died too at 17 in a car accident. Oh my God. Oh, that poor fella. Not to pick on the guy, but I'm just saying, like, really, this is the legacy? You named yourself, and Anderson, like, if you at least, look, if you got a standard name like Anderson, change it to something crazy, Ziegelthorpe, and you donate $15 million. I know you got to make this the Ziegelthorpe School of Business. The Googlyplex, what's your name? Bob Googlyplex. Now you got to name your engineering school after me. Well, I thought your name was Bob Bobson. Nope, it's Googlyplex now. I want that name. Then people would ask, who the fuck is Googlyplex? Who is Wigglethorpe? And then they would know your history and say, oh, it's this guy, and he changed the thing. Clary, even that's not unique enough. Now I come up with something different. Satan. Changed my last name to Satan. Nah, it's Aaron Satan. You got to call this the Satan School of Business. There we go. That's anyway, all right, well, listen, that's it. I'll let you guys go. You guys have a good week. Spread the good word of the podcast and the things and the stuff in the YouTube. Please tell people about Asshole Consulting if you got people that got problems. Follow me on the Twitter. I don't know why, but it does help. Also, if you could be so kind, to go to the iTunes and vote that up. That would help me go viral. Then I can make my millions, and then I can make them call it the Satan School. But look, if you here's wouldn't you like to have a business school at the end? How about this? Instead of the Carlson School, I'll muscle out Carlson, okay? If you guys help me go viral and I become like a billionaire with the sale of my books, I'm going to change my last name to Satan, and I'm going to donate $50 million to the University of Minnesota Carlson School. Say, yeah, but you got to change it to the Carlson School. I'm sorry, the Satan School of Management. And I will, because what else am I going to do with $1 billion? I can't take it with me. I'd love to call it the Satan School of Management. You won't get hired. I mean, it's still a crappy school at the University of Minnesota. But that'd be great. Come on, think about it. So spread the rumor around. Let's get the Satan School of Management going on. So anyway, that's it. Spread the good word. I'll talk to you kids later. Toodles.